It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News Podcast Network, I'm Dana Perino, and everything will be okay. This week, I'm joined by former senior counsel to President Trump and best-selling author of the memoir, Here's the Deal. Kellyanne Conway is a pollster, author, former senior White House counsel, mom, and an amazing friend. She's a woman of many titles. Kellyanne made a name for herself as a top political consultant, never shying away from offering her transparent and bold perspective. She's the real deal. Kellyanne, thank you for being here with me for the Everything Will Be Okay podcast.
I love the name of your podcast, Dana, almost as much as I love you. It's so fantastic because everything today can sound so negative and daunting and overwhelming. And just starting with a positive reaffirmation, let's go.
Well, you know, I really wanted to talk to you because I admire you so much. And I think that people don't know all sorts of things about you outside of politics. And so I have so much to get to. Let's start, though, at the beginning. We don't have to tell the whole story, but just so that people have an understanding of where you started out in life in the country and what you wanted to be when you grew up. And I also love the story of your beginning in Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Dana. So in some ways, my story could be anybody's American dream story. And in other ways, as is the case with every man and woman, it is my unique story. So I was raised in an unconventional household that included my mom, her mom, and two of my mom's unmarried sisters. So these four Italian Catholic women raised me. I call it South Jersey's version of the Golden Girls. I grew up at the kitchen table listening to all types of conversations in the 1970s and the 1980s. So abortion, Vietnam, certainly the women's liberation movement, no-fault divorce, economy, gas prices, et cetera. But we never had a political conversation that I can recall. So I feel like I grew up in an engaged household policy-wise that never broached politics. And people can't believe that. I came to my politics through those conversations, though. So nobody ever really said Republican or Democrat. They voted because it was their responsibility. They all voted for John F. Kennedy because he was a handsome Catholic young man, and God rest his soul. And then, of course, they voted for Ronald Reagan. But for me, I think I was raised to be a conservative without ever hearing the word, because it was about family, faith, country, respect the military, kneel for the Lord, stand for the flag, don't confuse the two. My relatives were all small business owners, emphasis on small. They just worked super hard to make ends meet. And my mom, I think she probably struggled financially, but never said so, to keep me in Catholic school. She, of course, was a single mom. And you fast forward to today, Dana, one of the fastest growing group of homeless in our country are single moms who have a job. And I look back at that, the job used to be enough. But I think I was destined to be a lawyer from a very young age because I was an only child, kind of lonely. And I would line up all my dolls and my stuffed animals, and I would make them my jewelry and the judge and the prosecutor and the defense. And I would play all those roles because, of course, they couldn't object or interrupt me. And people figured early on I would be a lawyer, and I am. I'm admitted to practice law in 4 states, but I practiced very briefly and I went right back into polling. But my life also included working on a blueberry farm for 8 summers, starting at the age of 12, when it was legal to start at the age of 12. And that taught me teamwork. It taught me responsibility, punctuality. I'm not always good at that, but it taught me that when you are responsible to someone else, you have to look them in the eyeballs and you must produce, you must deliver. That is a skill set that has served me my entire life. It also taught me to be a staffer, to be patient. And I think when you have, as the Bible says, the heart of a servant, when you have the heart of a staffer, you as a woman can develop the mind of a leader over time, so long as you do the work and you pay your dues and you wait your turn in some ways.
I've never heard it described that way, but I always say, I love being a staffer, or once a staffer, always a staffer.
Yes. It's very true.
There was this funny story during COVID. There was an article that I read about this young girl in Afghanistan who had just won an award. She was the first girl to ever win the country of Afghanistan's top academic achievement award. And this article was in the New York Times, and it was about the struggle to get her father on the phone because he worked way up in the north part of the country in a mine. And he would come home like once or twice a year. And so trying to get a phone call to the father. And the whole article is about that. And at the end, yes, the call gets through. The father cries. He's so proud of his daughter. And it's a beautiful story. So I get this article to 43, President Bush. And I said, I thought you would want to read this. It's early in the morning, too. I mean, I'm talking 6 a.m. my time. So it's 5 o'clock in Texas, and it is on a Saturday morning. So I sent it to him. And about 20 minutes later, he said, wow, thanks for sending. Great article. And about another 10 minutes later, there was another note. He said, do you have her address?
Wow. Incredible.
And I was like, Afghan girl who, what? No, I don't know. I just read
the former president could find it.
I just read the article. But what I said, I just said, I do not, but I will get it for you.
Once a staffer, always a staffer.
And I always will. I don't care if you call me right now. I will do it. I like being a staffer. I liked being behind the scenes. I got thrust to more of the front of the scenes.
Yes.
When Tony Snow, the White House press secretary, needed to depart for health reasons. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was so happy being behind the scenes. And that's when Margaret Spellings called me that day and she said, well, you better put your big girl panties on and deal with it.
Yes, and you did. And here you are, you're a household name.
Tell us about a moment for you when you went from staffer to being more in front.
It was a few different times in my career, but having that heart of the staffer, you know, when I interned for Jack Kemp, for example, in his last congressional term in 1988, Dana, people, you know, then we had fax machines, we had copy machines, there was no internet, Al Gore hadn't invented it yet. And people would ask me to make copies, they'd ask me to like be a courier for different things. Some people really resented that. You can see even at the staff level and certainly at the intern level, they resented that. I learned early on to read what they were asking me to copy. It wasn't off limits. And so I'd read every word. And if 10 people had asked me to make copies that day or carry things around or look for typos, I feel like I was the only person in the office who had read everybody's stuff.
Right.
So you develop, you start to learn and you listen. And when you're asked, do you have any questions or what do you think of that? You better be ready for that. So I think I was developing those leadership skills by being a staffer. And just as is the case with you, you don't know when you're going to be thrust forward, but you better learn how to say yes. Here's my advice to young people. I say it all the time. Learn to say the word yes more and accept the word no more. You will be rejected. You will be in a failing relationship, or you won't get that seat in a college or a graduate school. You won't get the promotion at work. You won't get the job you really could taste and that you thought you had killed it in the interview and that you deserved and you worked hard for. You got to dust yourself off and move on and not be bitter and not second guess. But you can't be saying the word no. You have to accept the word no. If you're the one who keeps saying no, hey, can anybody stay a couple extra hours tonight? Hey, can anybody work on the weekend? Would you mind flying to St. Louis next week for document discovery? If you're the person who keeps saying no and is seen as unreliable, then they'll stop asking you.
I think it only takes two times.
I believe it. They mark you as unreliable. And I would go a step farther. Often the crisis takes care of itself. It gets solved long before you have to go to St. Louis or stay all weekend. And yet you get the credit as the person who raised her hand and said, yes, I'll stay. How do I help? Put me in, coach, please. And you get the credit for doing that. And yes, you get your weekend back anyway. So it's that I think for me, it was a start of my own business. So I started my own polling company on June 1st, 1995. I was 28 years old. It's half my life ago. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I'm so glad I did it. And I think part of it was, even though my family, nobody went to college, nobody went to law school like I did, but I felt that they gave me an example of being an entrepreneur. And I also felt that only I knew the priorities I would have later on to be a wife and a mother. And I looked around the practice of law at the time in the early 90s in Washington, D.C., Dana, and I thought, it looks like a thankless profession for a young woman who may want to be on the partner track but also take some time off to have children. And so I looked at the three female partners in the law firm where I was a summer associate and eventually got a job, and I thought, this is not for me, and that's okay. So I went out on my own. But I have to say, you don't just become an entrepreneur overnight. You do it after you've failed a few times and after you've had setbacks. And I've learned much more from my failures. You have to learn patience. The other thing I learned, and this is particularly for women, if I may, I learned that there's plenty of room for passion in your work, but not a ton of room for emotion. And you have to learn early on the difference between being emotional and being passionate. Mm. And I don't mean to say that just to women, but I think that we don't want to play into some of the stereotypes that we're more emotional or we're more indecisive. You know what? Be decisive, stand your ground, state something. People would ask me to do something as a burgeoning leader. Can you do this? And I'd say, yes, I can. And then I'd say, oh boy, I got to figure this out now. But that's my whole point about saying yes. Good old fashioned hard work, great mentors who expected both, who were kind and nurturing, but also demanding and direct. And you need both. And I think a little bit of good luck, like you and I have both had. And that's really the non-secret secret.
Yeah. And a willingness to be open to the good luck and to say yes.
We'll be right back with more of this interview right after this.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Boy, there's a couple of great stories I just thought of when you were talking about mentors. And a lot of this podcast is for people who are trying to get some good advice. And one of the pieces of advice is, how do you find a mentor? And there's this thinking that it has to be a real formal relationship. I don't see it that way. I see mentors all the time. I have mentors I never met that
right.
I get to watch from afar and see. But one of the things you mentioned about Capitol Hill, so the congressman I worked for initially, Dan Schaefer of Colorado, he had a bill, it was a tax cut bill, and he was working with a Blue Dog Democrat. That's back in the day when they existed, right? So it was kind of a conservative Democrat from a sort of Republican state. And that guy had a press secretary who was a bit older than me and very good at his job. He was an excellent press secretary. And I was just pretty new on the job, just learning. And I'll never forget, on the fourth time they had a joint meeting and I came in to the meeting and this guy who worked, I don't want to say his name, let's just call him John, said, Dana, why don't you make the copies and I'll brief the boss? And on the fourth time, and I didn't say anything. I was just like, okay.
Yeah, here.
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful.
Absolutely.
Anything
I'm making
else?
The copies. You bet. And I that on the fourth time that this happened, the congressman I worked for said, actually, John, you go make the copies. We want to hear from her.
I love it.
And that's happened more times than I can count in my life where somebody, a male figure, has said, she can do it. I want to give her an opportunity. And I don't want young women to think that men are the problem in the workplace.
It could be, but then it's pretty obvious. It's not been my experience. People
right.
ask me all the time, Dana, did the old boys network get in your way?
No.
No, the new boys network did once in a while. People maybe my age and maybe a little
yeah.
bit younger.
Yeah.
And they still try. But the old boys network, no, because you remind them of their daughters or in some cases granddaughters or nieces or their own staffers. And they say, you know what? I may have wisdom, experience, wealth as this older, accomplished man in business or politics or Capitol Hill. But this young woman, technology is probably her native tongue more than ever. She's got energy. She has eagerness. She probably has gifts and ideas that I haven't even thought of because I'm cosseted here at the top. And it really, you're so right about having mentors, small m, so that we don't feel like it's some kind of formal program. Sometimes they never even know that they're mentoring you. And I feel now you probably have no idea how many people that you're mentoring just by them observing
yeah.
and feeling that they have to tune in and literally listen. I wanted to go back to something also, and then I'll bring it to the big job I got because of President Trump. But I wanted to go back to, I mentioned that, you know, my mom and her female relatives raised me. I met my father when I was 12. He left when I was close to three. They got divorced and he got a woman at work pregnant and she had a boy and he went with them and had another family. I met him when I was 12 and I easily could have said to my mother, no, I don't want to meet him. I don't want the three of us to have dinner. I thought it was important to her. So I said yes, but I thought I had a great life and I did have a great life without him. But he filled a hole that only a parent can. One, two, I want everybody to hear that as me, the flawed person, the flawed woman of faith, allowing to cover my father in my mercy and grace and redemption, because I'm somebody who asks for forgiveness and redemption and grace and mercy. So I learned at the age of 12, almost 13, Dana, to offer it. If I'm actually going to ask you to receive it from you at some point in my life, I am duty bound to offer it to those who are seeking it. And my father and I had a loving present relationship for 40 years until he passed away a few years ago, right before COVID, he passed away. And that also, I want people to know that story about second chances in your career, but second chances in life also.
How did you know that, do that at 13, at 12?
It looked important to my mom, who I felt had really suffered. And I felt that he, you know, I felt like my dad, it looks like he went on to have the great life, you know, left her with all the responsibility, but she's such a wonderful person. He missed out on a wonderful wife, and he missed out on some really cool years with his daughter. But I'll tell you, and I tell a lot of my male friends, my platonic male friends who are going through divorces or who have teenage girls or tweens, I say, listen, I didn't meet my father till I was 12, but that's around the age that girls really start to notice the importance of paternal affection and affirmation and attention. So the fact that you're there in some capacity mm-hmm. is so important. But I think that carried me through, and I was never looking for the father figure in the workforce, but I identified strong men who were willing to mentor young women. And look, when the history books are written and it says Kellyanne Conway, first female successful campaign manager in U.S. history, you have to put a comma, and it has to say, and it's Donald Trump who put her there, because he's the first Republican presidential candidate to ever do that. And I'm the first one from either party to have succeeded. But it's so important to note that whatever you think of Donald Trump, the fact is he was an excellent boss, but particularly an excellent boss to the women in the White House. I write in my memoir, Here's the Deal, Dana, that I looked up in a meeting. It said 8:18 a.m. You know, on my phone one day. Well, you can't have your phone in there on the watch one day. And I was taking notes, and I just happened to look around the room in the Roosevelt room where you've been many times. Mm-hmm. And I saw Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Ivanka Trump, Brooke Rollins, Mercedes Schlapp, and me. Between the five of us women, we have 19 children.
That's a lot of kids.
19 children.
Yep.
At that moment, those 19 children were the ages 2 to 16.
Mm-hmm.
There's nowhere else. We all had the highest rank you can have in the West Wing. It's mm-hmm. called assistant to the president. There's nowhere else, I think, in this country that you're going to find five working moms like that with those ages of that many kids who have that high rank, the C-suite rank, if you will, able to be there at 8:20 in the morning and respected by their boss. So I appreciate that. And I mean, you asked me, when did I get into a leadership position? Often it was because someone took a chance on me. And that's not to say we haven't worked with great women. And we both have. I know we have. But I do want women to know. And I think things have become very disjointed. I think some of these would-be male mentors are worried now. They're a little bit hesitant to even try to mentor you because of all the Me Too stuff swirling around them. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't intend something a certain way or they don't have any malicious intent, it could be interpreted that way. And I worry that some of our young women are not going to get the same opportunities that we had.
Yeah. Do you think that is abating at all?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think the woke and cancel culture
there was a while
abating.
That like,
I think
a,
Me Too is abating.
A boss would say they didn't even want to have a meeting one-on-one mm-hmm. with their direct report, who happened to be a woman.
Yep. Open door. Somebody else has to be in there. Then you can never have a private conversation. Then you're stuck trying to call them on their cell phone, or you're stuck trying to say, can I see you in my office, and trying to close the door, like almost creating the situation that was being tried to avoid. So anyway, we just don't want to overgeneralize for anyone, but I hope that is abating and that women will grab those opportunities. Look, my message to young women too is always the same. Be a product of your choices, not a victim of your circumstances, and always be in the driver's seat and make those choices. I felt some things that I absolutely thought I wanted to do with my career, like be a prosecutor. If you can do that over a semester or in a summer, or just try to nibble at it, dip your toe in rather than just jump in the deep end, that's a great way for you to suss out whether that's your true calling. And that helped me, I think, also narrow the range of choices over time.
That happened with me. I always thought that I wanted to be, like, my highest career goal was to be one of the evening anchors in a major media market. I wanted local news, and I was kind of like focusing on the southwest part of the country. That's where I thought I wanted to be. And then I did local news for 6 months during my graduate degree, and I called my dad and said, I think I just got a graduate degree with a significant amount of student loans for something I don't want to do.
You don't want to do.
And then I thought, oh my gosh, well, that means that I'll never get to work in TV then. If I don't work in TV now, I'll never work in TV again.
We all have to giggle.
Yes, isn't that strange?
If her friends could see her now. And they do.
And I always say, like, what I'm doing now, like, doing the news in the morning and then talking about the news in the afternoon on the 5 is exactly what I always wanted to do. But all of us take a very circuitous route
you
to
got
get
it.
There.
Circuitous. But you have to stay on the route.
Okay, how do you do that?
You have to stay on the route. So you have to have patience, and you have to also, and perseverance. And it sounds so cliche, but there's really no substitute for it. If you take an off ramp just because you think it'll never happen, or you're beneath this kind of work or the salary or whatever, you have to take the long view. I've learned to take the long view of people, places, and things, and of myself. And if you take the long view and you picture yourself 15 years down the road, it sounds so far away when you're 21 or 25. It's really not.
No, it's not.
And so if you do that, and then you end up working toward it, it ends up being not a privilege or an entitlement, it ends up being a goal. And step by step, you make your way there. I think, be patient enough, but have a plan. I think that's the key. And the plan should be in pencil, but you should have some kind of plan. Yeah. And my other advice is try not to do it online. I know people are criticized, get off your phone. The phone is a way of life, but the modification I would give to that, Dana, as advice, career advice is, and I'm giving this to my own 18-year-old daughter who wants to take a gap year now. I say, go for it, honey. We support you. We'll help you with your rent or the compensation if there is none. But has to be in person. You have to be accountable. You have to get dressed up and show up at a certain time, look a boss and many different bosses in between in the eye, be accountable for production and delivery. And I learned the most in being in the office, in actually having that walk by, talk by, collaborative stuff, developing friendships or acquaintanceships, but also just listening. You learn to listen, and not just, what happens is the workplace is an exit and an entrance for your brain. The phone sometimes is just an entrance. You're just getting what other people are posting. So I think it's important to have a plan, but I would say you can write it in pencil and then be patient as you, and then keep the people who love you for who you are super close to you. I know, again, sounds like a Hallmark card. It's not. It's very true, because they will keep you in check and humble when you do make it, and you all will, ladies and men, but they also they'll be there to support you when you fall. And when you fail, because you will.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you for this season's podcast is I read an interview that you did. The article was actually about your 18-year-old daughter. In the article, you're quoted. You did several, I don't know how long you talked to them, but everything you say is so impactful. So they were able to take your quotes, and they don't need a single edit. She never says, it's just like, boom, right there in the article. And I felt reading it that it was one of the most beautiful expressions of a mother's love for a daughter I had ever read.
Thank you.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about finding that work-life balance, whatever that meant for you, because the question I get asked the most, and I think most women in the workplace get asked the most, is how do you handle the work-life balance? And more young men are asking it more than ever now, too. I always say there is no perfect work-life balance. I can't give you the formula. I can't tell you it's exactly this. Everybody has to find it for themselves. What did that look like for you?
Sure. And the work-life balance, I think for young moms, I wasn't a young mom, but I was a mom of young children, Dana, is when I hear balance, it often makes us sound like we're all harried in a vomit-encrusted college sweatshirt, not showering ourselves. It's not that. I like to think of us more as the equilibrium, the fulcrum, if you will, and there is a seesaw of life on either end and trying to keep that all in balance. But, when you're the fulcrum, you can see all sides of the seesaw. But for me, it was, first of all, it could be for anybody. You don't have to have kids. We're all caring for elderly parents and relatives. We have pets to take care of. We have spouses. We have friends and relatives who rely upon us, colleagues who rely upon us. But everybody needs to take care of themselves and each other. And I think we don't take care of ourselves sometimes as women. I think we ignore certain health risks. I think that we don't get enough sleep, don't really conserve our own energy. But for me, the work-life balance was making some sacrifices early on in my career, saying no to the big partnership, saying no to the big legal job and some other opportunities I had. I had an opportunity here early on with Roger Ailes, God rest his soul. And it was, around the time I was starting my company and getting engaged, and then I wanted to have children, except they came later. But I said no. I actually said maybe, which wasn't a great answer at the time, but it was the right answer. And those opportunities come back. This has come back for me in a different form, and I'm pleased with that. But only you are the expert on you. You're the best expert on you. And again, keeping those people who love you for you, your relatives, your friends that you consider family, to give you advice rather than society giving you advice, and rather than other people who, you know, may not have the best intentions giving you advice. For me, I do try to exercise a few times a week. And here's what I tell women. You don't have to do it 7 days a week. If you do it 3 days a week, it's actually less than half of the week. So mentally, I'm saying to myself, oh, I don't even have to worry about doing this half the week. So if you get the fourth day in there, even if it's a 20-minute walk up a hill, take the dog out, just put your earphones on, listen to something for fun. And don't apologize. Don't apologize to listening to a podcast, the Dana Perino podcast for fun. Your favorite music from a different era for fun. Don't apologize. But the other thing I've learned to do too, because it gave me great work life and really life balance, is as much as I love them, I decided I had to stop listening to the same conversations from the same friends over the same meals about the stuff they're never going to change. It didn't help me. And it honestly, Dana, doesn't help them, because we politely nod our head and hear them through, but they're never going to take action. They're just going to look at us for affirmation of something they know needs to change. So I did that also. I try not to miss family birthdays or friends' weddings. Sometimes you have to. I just missed a friend's wedding, but it was because my mom was very sick. Mm-hmm. But the point is, make those goals. If you miss a friend's wedding or a family birthday that you could have done, you will never remember what breaking news story, what you were doing, what work assignment there was that prevented you from doing that. And so if you have those in mind, but I think you need peace. People like to, I like, you know, you're talking about Claudia, my daughter. I have four children. George and Claudia are twins. They're 18. Charlotte's just turning 15 this week. Vanessa's 13. And
You are in it.
But people say, when I show up to give a speech or hear at a podcast, they'll say, Kellyanne, thank you for coming. I'm like, listen, to put on the suit and heels and sit on the tarmac for a couple hours, I have four teenagers at home. This is like a spa day. So thank you for having me. But Dana, seriously, you're talking about the Bustle article that was an interview with Claudia, and I'm so proud of her for turning 18. And your colleague on the Five, Jessica Tarloff, is an executive there at Bustle, I believe. And it was a great article because it all came from Claudia, and they asked me a few questions, and I said, look, Claudia is loved unconditionally and supported unequivocally. And I talked about how, you know, she became a social media sensation. She became an influencer. She came to me last year. She said, Mom, I don't want to be an influencer. I want to be an activist. I want to have impact, not influence. And I thought, I didn't know that at 18. That's a really smart distinction with a difference. But what I said was, listen, my daughter's beautiful and brilliant, and anybody who says otherwise is just jealous of her. So there is something like that too. You know what, Dana? There will always be critics and naysayers for each of us, especially for someone like you who got in the public eye young and is still there in such a sustained way. I'm sure, I don't know who would ever be critical of you, but I'm sure they're out there. And I just say this to everyone. It's so easy, especially for us women, to focus on the negative. There's this old story that if 99 people out of 100 compliment you, that's the most beautiful sweater. You look amazing. I've never heard anybody more brilliant on TV and on a podcast. Wow, Dana Perino, you're the it girl. And then one person tells you the opposite. It's our nature to focus on that one person.
You'll never forget it.
You'll never forget it.
It's so weird.
You never forget it. Guys kind of brush it off sometimes.
Isn't that weird?
Though.
I know. I watch them. I work with one of them. I'll just name him Jesse Waters. This guy does not worry. And I'm always like, Jesse, he does not worry. And I think it's amazing. My husband, when he read the first draft of my book, this one, Everything Will Be Okay, he finished and he said, it's amazing. He said, but I couldn't help but think that women spend so much more time worrying about what we are thinking about than we actually spend thinking.
Yes. There's this great anecdote you can share with Peter that a husband and a wife are sitting having dinner and they're eating steak. And this is the unlikely scenario, but he went and picked it up. He brought the steak home and they cooked and they're eating. And if she says, where did you get the steak? Without looking up, chewing, he'll say, Joe's Butcher Shop. If the husband asks the wife, where did you get the steak? She'll say, why? What's wrong with it? And pick it up and try to, you know, fix it and cook it in.
Right.
And so I think there's something to that. Maybe it's different for this generation. I do see a certain confidence. But to your point about work-life balance, I don't want these younger generations to think it's not doable. You are the expert on you. And whatever you're doing now as a young person or a student or a single person without all those responsibilities, maybe you want to have later, maybe the responsibilities, you own a home or you own an apartment and you own a pet and you have responsibility for something in someone else. Whatever you choose to do, in addition to being a product of your choices, not a victim of your circumstances, continue to do what you were doing for you, but you're just widening your heart in a way that you didn't even know existed, that you had that capacity. But I don't want younger generations to fall into this trap that I see in polls now, Dana, which is so many of them don't think they want to get married
and
children or even buy homes. Or did you see, I think we talked about it, you talked about it on your show one day, and I talked about it with you and Bill Hemmer off camera, which is these kids don't want their driver's licenses. They want to be an Uber. It's like, oh, you and I were talking about the minute we can get our driver's license.
They don't want the risk and the expense.
So they're very worried about what may happen, what they may fail. Don't do that. Make the big moves, even if they feel like small moves, because they're baby steps. And if you need to dip your toe and stay in the shallow end a little while, that's fine. But get wet. Jump in somehow. And I really worry.
What do you listen to for fun?
Oh, I listen to podcasts, and I find them by topics and by people I enjoy. I will tell you, if I tune into a podcast and people are bantering for the first 5 minutes about wine, W-I-N-E, or wine, W-H-I-N-E, I'm more likely to turn it off. But yeah. I find I learn more about health, mental health. You know, we have some of that in our family, so I wanted to learn a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. For example, I listen to 1970s and 80s music.
I love that.
Nonstop. I know every word. I watch game shows, old game shows. I watch MeTV. I turn the TV and I clean. I clean for fun. I know this makes people crazy. But what I do for fun, I connect with people who make me feel great and who know me from way back when. I'll take a long walk. Anybody ever wants to walk with me?
I love to walk.
Love to walk. Anybody ever wants to walk, I'll be there. Because you walk and you talk. And
I think that's always good too. Like when people say, do you want to have coffee? I'm like, I absolutely don't. I actually never want to have coffee. For anybody listening, I never want to have coffee. I don't have time to have coffee. Especially if you sit down with a young woman who's like, can I have coffee? Okay, you sit down. And then they say, what do you think I should do? Oh, no. I'm not having that conversation. What do you want to do? And then we can go from there. That doesn't happen very often. But
no, it's good advice.
It happened one time.
It's good advice.
I can envision it right now where we were sitting at this diner, and finally at the end of the conversation, this young woman said, so what do you think I should do? I was like, wait, that's why we're here? That's why you wanted to have coffee for me to tell you? And I said, oh, I have no idea.
It happens routinely. The other thing, please don't ever say to someone is, I just want to pick your brain. That's the equivalent of what you just said. It's like, you're not picking my brain.
That's a good, actually, I should do a whole podcast on what not to ask your mentor.
No, I'll give you my whole list. You can read it. So the two other things I do for fun and relaxation and fulfillment, one I don't talk about at all, which is I do a little bit of charitable work and contribution, but I try not to talk about it because then it's not real. I'm sure they would like me to surface myself, but I do that. And the other thing that I do for fun is I love live events. So it could be a dinner party at someone's home for 14 people. It could be a larger cocktail party. It could be a concert, a Broadway show. I've slipped into that seat at the 2 p.m. Wednesday matinee more times than I can count in my life.
Have you seen A Beautiful Noise?
I have not. I'd love to.
Peter and then my mom and her friend from Denver came, and it was just joy.
Yeah, that's what
I mean. Peter was very overwhelmed. He was like, this was my childhood. He knew every word. He had every album. And there was a little bit of audience participation. You know, sometimes when you come to Broadway and the audience is singing, or I didn't know that Neil Diamond grew up in Brooklyn, but everybody in the audience knew he grew up in Brooklyn.
Barry Manilow, yes.
And Barbara Streisand went to his high school.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. I love hearing that. No, it's a great story. And anyway, that's what I love. I love live performances. And whether it's taking the girls to the Taylor Swift concert soon, just took
you
them all
tickets?
To the Super Bowl. I did get tickets.
Super Mom. More to come right after this. One of the other things I think is really important is for people to know that your mentor or the person you look up to has humility and a willingness to laugh at themselves or at their circumstances. Having a sense of humor is so important. I always think, I don't take myself that seriously. I take my responsibilities seriously, but not myself. And one of the stories I always tell is about this time I got kicked out of the Oval Office, and I was junior birdman. I had only just gotten there, and Dan Bartlett, the comms director, asked me if I could sit in on this interview the president was supposed to do with a columnist, and it was supposed to be about Iran. And of course, I had done that kind of work before. I just had never done it with the president or in the Oval Office. So I said, sure. He said, I'll come down and I will, I'll brief the president, but then I have to go to this other meeting. So can you just sit there and take notes? And then after 30 minutes, call it and see the reporter out. I said, sure. Okay, I can do that. So I get to the Oval Office and there'd been a miscommunication between the president and Bartlett. And he was like, no, I didn't say I would do an interview with him. I said I would talk to him, but I'm not doing an interview because then
it's all on the record.
The Iranians would think I'm talking to him through the reporter, and I'm not going to do that. His instincts were excellent. He was exactly right. And so he's saying this to Dan, and then he says, therefore, she doesn't need to be here. And then he looked my way and cocked his head towards the door. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I was like, I don't think I even said anything. I can still feel that rush of like, ooh, dread. And I crawled the 33 steps back to my office, shut the little pocket door behind me, and I called Peter. And I'm tearful, not crying, but I'm tearful. He said, what happened? So I tell him the whole story. And he said, this is amazing. For the rest of your life, you can say, I've been kicked out of better places than this.
Peter.
So 10 years later, I'm then doing the president's book tour. And we're on a flight. And I'm trying to just be the court jester because it's a long flight. And now he's been out of doing interviews for 2 years. He didn't want to talk to the press. So I'm telling him a story, and then I don't know why it came up. I said, sir, do you remember when you kicked me out of the Oval Office? And he said, I never kicked you out of the Oval Office. I said, no, don't you remember? And I remember everything. Just like you were saying,
you
remember the 99 compliments, you can't remember the one time. And I told him the whole story, and he said, are you still upset? I said, yes.
Apparently, if you're mentioning it.
I said, yes. He goes, I think you can let it go.
I think it all worked out.
I never would have kicked you out of the Oval Office. And I just wonder if you have a story like that, whether at the White House or something else, where you remember that feeling and you share it and now you look back and laugh about it.
I do. Oh, so many times. And before I say that, before you got kicked out of the office, you witnessed something really powerful. Your husband Peter's instincts were spot on, which is, yes, you got kicked out. You'll never remember it. I mean, you'll never forget it. But you saw why he got elected president in that moment.
Yeah,
you saw why he beat a sitting vice president of a popular president and a former senator.
Always three steps ahead.
Always three steps ahead. Mm-hmm. So you saw that. I have so many. I have more than I can count. I mean, I learned early on that live TV doesn't wait for you. If you're late, you kind of miss
you
it.
You mentioned punctuality earlier.
Yeah, no, it's always been an issue for me. So there's plenty of stories like that. But I also, I'll give you a good one. It sounds so silly, but looking back, this is a good one. It just tells you that sort of when you grow up in a certain way, maybe you don't know what you don't know. So in other words, I don't even know how to learn a lesson that I don't know exists. So I remember being in Italy, and I was there with friends as like a study abroad, and I went to sit down. We all, you know, you order your entree, and then you go up to the antipasto, and you make your plate. And I took a long time. I don't know why. Maybe I thought I was talking as usual. And when I got back to the table, everybody else there was Italian. And I'm Italian, but I'm an American Italian. And I went to sit down, and I saw I had the classic American overflowing, heaping plate. And I went to put it down. Everybody else has, you can see the whites of the plate. They have two chickpea, a half a beet, a little, they're splitting a manigot four ways. You know, they're, and I'm like, oh, here comes the ugly American with like, she thinks she's in Las Vegas, all you can eat buffet at Caesars. And so I caught myself and I put it in the middle of the table and pretended I gotten it for everyone.
That's so good.
But that's sort of the culture example. I think the other example is me walking into the wrong meeting in the Oval. This happened where they tried to stop me, but I did have walking in privileges.
Right.
But I also was raised by a woman, not a wolf. I also would just not walk into the Oval Office. Who does that? Well, a lot of people I worked with did that. A lot of the guys I work with did that. But I usually sort of knocked when I felt like I was late for the meeting because I was out doing a TV hit or something and the press stopped me. So I'm running and running. They're trying to stop me. It's like in real time. It was like comment. And the president, the outer Oval team is trying to stop me. Kellyanne. And I rushed in there. Usually you could just peep through. And I rushed in there because I was absolutely certain that we were still having that meeting that we'd all prepared for the day before, like 15 of us. I'm just going to blend in on the little and just stand there. And the president had switched his schedule. And he was in there with, you know, I would just say of two very important people on an entirely different matter. You know, since the Oval Office is skiff. And I'm like, and I'm just going to walk right out that door. And what I did was I said, I'm sorry. I think I dropped an earring in here and it belonged to my grandmother. I just caught myself. And the president still looked at me because he knows, you know, we're very close. And I just kind of winked and went out the
outside the other door.
The other door. Yeah. What's it called? The dining room. Just kept walking. Like, I think I don't see it. I'll come back later. Which was a total lie. And I feel terribly saying that, but I had to catch myself. I'm like busted in there, like, Kellyanne. And you get a little embarrassed, but sometimes it's you're overeager and it's you just catch yourself.
There's a great story that Dave McCormick has. Do you know Dave McCormick?
He's got a great new book.
Yes, he does. Has a good new book coming out. He ran and lost to Dr. Oz in that Pennsylvania primary. His new book is about America.
Power in peril.
Superpower in peril.
Power in peril. I think, or superpower.
A couple P's
peril,
or something in there. And it's a good book. I'm about halfway through. And he tells a story about he had all these binders and he was there to brief the president on Air Force One on this trade issue because they were going to a big meeting and the president doesn't want to get briefed. He's like, I got it. I know this stuff. But this is Dave's first chance. So he says, okay. So he has a little time with the president, briefs him, and then they go to the meeting and the briefer could not sit with the leader in the meeting. The leaders were just by themselves. And if the leader needed you, he'd press a button and the light would come up and then you would know you need to go out. So everybody gets settled. The leaders are meeting. And about 15 minutes in, USA, President Bush needs Dave McCormick. It's like, grabs all his binders and is walking through like, excuse me. Gets to the president, leans in, says, yes, Mr. President. And 43 said, oh, sorry. Wrong button.
but Dave was ready. He was prepared.
And
that's
Dave,
what I'm saying. You never know.
Dave uses that in speeches to just be like, look, like there's a lot of great jobs, but I've never been more humbled.
By the way, sometimes people push the wrong button and it's your calling.
That works
the other way too.
Wrong button. I have a few short questions and we'll wrap it up. So this is like a little lightning round. How do you define success?
Success is feeling personally fulfilled and having enough monetary success that you feel that you're free to make your own choices.
That's a great answer. This might be hard. I don't know if I could actually answer this question, but you might since you know all the words. What would be a good theme song for your life?
Probably Jersey Girl. But let's see. I think that a good theme song might be Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, but I think Nikki Haley just took that one. I'm just going to say Jersey Girl and keep it simple.
I like that. I was just thinking the only one I could come up with was Friends in Low Places. I got some, believe me.
How about Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
That's a good one. What historical figure do you think would be funny on Twitter?
Oh, funny on Twitter. The historical figure who would be funny on Twitter. Oh, probably President Reagan because he was an actor who had a great sense of humor.
I was going to say Richard Nixon.
It might
be funny on Twitter because actually that fake Richard Nixon account is pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. Although he was a little paranoid.
I wonder who does that one.
I'm going to go with President Reagan because he great this. Yeah, he at the end, one of the last interviews he ever gave Dana, they said, we still can't believe that an actor became president. How did an actor become president? Yeah. And President Reagan said, I still can't believe that you can actually be president without having been an actor first.
That's very good. Very good. What are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for my family, certainly. To be mother to these four children, they're the four chambers of my heart. They're the heartbeat of our family. They're my top priority. And I can't believe how God has blessed me that way. I had two at 37, two others in my 40s. They say they're, ladies, again, you can stage your life. I mean, you're a product of your choices, not a victim of your circumstances. But also, in addition, what I should say is you can sequence your life. I always say that people say, oh, there are no eggs left in your 40s. I'm like, well, there are two rolling around in there somewhere, Vanessa and Charlotte. And look, the two aunts who helped raise me in the house never had children of their own. You can have a very satisfying full life that way too, because you're always going to love somebody else's kids. But far and above, my kids almost define everything else as secondary.
Right. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was that what I read at how you described motherhood. I had just read a novel that I loved called Hamnet.
Yes.
Did you read that one?
Yes.
It's a beautiful description of motherhood and a mother's love for her children.
I just wonder how many moms can take the time to read the whole thing. I was trying to get through it and I finally did.
I listened to it.
Yeah, which is the greatest.
I love listening to fiction. I didn't think I would. I wouldn't think I'd be able to pay attention, but I can.
The other thing for me is I'm an only child. George, the kid's father, is an only child. So I'm glad they have each other.
Yes.
And I'm glad they fight like siblings. They love like siblings. And I can already see that they're going to have each other. The kids will have each other.
It's so important to my mom, too, that my sister and I remain close.
Yes.
And I think family is most important.
Fabulous.
Last funny question. What is the item in your closet you wear the most?
A leather jacket that I've had for about, let's see, 1997. So that's 25 years. And it's brown leather jacket, beat up now, but in the back is a K for my initial in pink. And I got it at a boutique in Washington, D.C. I could hardly afford it. It was special. I saved up for it. It was special to me. I saved up. I paid cash for it. And it still fits. And I have no idea if it's in style one season or the next, but I wear it and I get so many compliments on it. Where did you get it? They look at the tag. They look it up online. They can't find it anywhere. And I love it too, because I remember at the time I was single and Major League Baseball was a big client of mine for about 11 years. And I was out with somebody who I really liked. And he was, he was an acquaintance, and I knew him in business. And he said, "Oh, what's the K for?" And I thought, "Oh boy, this is not going to work. He doesn't know what the K is for, Kellyanne." And I caught myself and I said, "Oh, that's for poor guy now." I said, "That's for Alfonso Soriano, the time he kept striking out at the plate as a Yankee." And the guy thought I just was so smart in sports. It was perfect. It gave me great cred. But that jacket has seen just so many lives.
Part of life.
Yeah. And I just, whenever I'm trying to give things away or say, "No, this is going to come back and sound a little bit of a pack rat with my clothes," because I like grocery shopping, I like clothes shopping. So I try to keep things and then they come back in style. But that leather jacket, I didn't even hesitate when you asked me. And I can tell you what I don't wear too much, which are like leggings, because it drives me insane. I know when that became the uniform, the anthem.
That's true.
Of suburbia.
That's true. Kellyanne, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All the best.
I did not want that podcast to end. I could have kept going, but as you could tell, she's a very busy woman. And a wonderful one, too. I really loved our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts. Leave a rating and review. I'm Dana Perino. Everything will be okay. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to Fox News Podcast shows ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or follow wherever you get your podcasts.